Hi, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. Thanks for joining me here in 2021. My guest is someone who's been on this program quite a few times, Nava Atlas. She's the author of many best-selling vegetarian and vegan cookbooks, including Five Ingredient Vegan, Vegan on a Budget, Wild About Greens, Vegan Holiday Kitchen, and Vegan Soups and Hearty Stews for All Seasons. Nava also creates visual books on women's issues and runs two websites, The Vegan Atlas, theveganatlas.com, and literaryladiesguide.com, Literary Ladies Guide. She lives in the Hudson Valley region of New York with her family. And today we're talking about plant-powered protein, 125 recipes for using today's amazing meat alternatives. Woo! Nava, how are you today?
Good, a little frazzled from yesterday, but we'll survive this as well.
We will. So I want to say that we're recording this on Thursday, January 7th, and it will air this Tuesday, 13th? The 12th. Yeah. January 12th.
Something like that. It will air. Almost mid-January. Imagine that.
Exactly. So this program will air on January 12th, and those of you who are listening will be listening whenever you choose to download it and tune in. And who knows what's going to happen between today, January 7th, and January 12th, because every day has been just hysterical in the last 4 years.
Yes.
And we're all a little tired today because yesterday we had a coup.
We did.
We had a lot of people who had planned to break into the Capitol and succeeded, and it made for great primetime TV. And fortunately, things seem to be calm and back to normal. And Joe Biden and Kamala Harris will become our president and vice president very soon. We have a lot of changes that need to happen. So let's all just take a deep breath. And let's get back to my favorite subject, food. And we're talking about plant-powered protein. And before we start, Nava, well, we already started. Before we get into the book, I want to remind everyone that for those of us who have been in this vegetarian vegan movement for decades, like Nava has, like I have, we have seen the injustices decade after decade that have happened with animals in animal agriculture and in factory farms, and to the point where we're not even allowed to see what's going inside those factories. And laws have been passed to protect this evilness. So what happened yesterday was horrible and frightening, but there have been terrible things that have been going on in this country and outside of this country, and not much has happened. There's a growing movement, and it's a beautiful thing, trying to get people off the animal. But this world is not as pretty as we like to think it is sometimes. So with that in mind, let's talk about plant-powered protein, shall we, Nava?
We shall. And you know, let's start on a really positive note. I think with all the horrible things that have gone on, especially in the last year, the plant protein movement has grown exponentially. I would say it really started taking, well, it's been slow building, but I think 2019 was a pivotal year. That was when Beyond did its IPO. And I just feel like it went into the forefront. And just recently, my brother sent me a link to an article in the New York Times that there's this huge vegan movement in, of all places, Brazil. Like one of the meat capitals of the world.
Right. I remember that article.
Rainforests have been destroyed. And I do think that that contributes to, you know, all kinds of climate catastrophes. And then somebody recently, a friend of mine who's a vegan, said she and her husband think, well, maybe they'll spend winters in Buenos Aires. And I thought, wait a minute, you can't get vegan food there. She said, no, it's changed in the last couple of years. It's also one of the vegan capitals of South America. I mean, this would have been almost unheard of, I would say, 2-3 years ago.
Right. Well,
this movement is happening everywhere.
You said it's been slow growing, and I want to focus in on that for a moment. So I was in Buenos Aires in 2007.
I'm sorry, I missed one of the words there. You were in?
Buenos Aires.
Oh, Buenos Aires, okay.
In 2007, and I had no problem finding vegan food or vegan restaurants.
Well, that's good.
I was surprised, though, in one place, I ordered the hummus. And it had an unusual flavor to it because it was chickpeas mixed with peanut butter, not tahini.
Okay.
Because they probably didn't have access to tahini back then. I don't know, or it was too expensive, whatever. But it was not hard to find healthy food. And I was also in Brazil at the IVU, the International Vegetarian Union Congress that was in Brazil, 2004 or so. And where I was, well, I visited Rio de Janeiro and then I went to the Congress. And of course it was all vegan, so it was really easy to eat well, but there was a growing movement there. And what I want to say is all of these wonderful things that are happening with Beyond Meat and their IPO that just exploded as soon as it was offered. None of this could have happened without decades of grassroots action. Decades.
Yes, I totally agree. Yes.
The time was right. People were ready for it. We've been throwing it at people for so long that it doesn't seem as extreme or weird. It has a better feeling, and we're overwhelmed with the climate and chronic disease is exploding. People are ready, but
yes,
I have to acknowledge you and everybody that's been at it for decades.
Well, I was going to say that I've certainly seen the sea change. I do tell people that when I became a vegetarian, just a vegetarian in high school, really one of the only ones in my fairly large high school, it was enough to be branded as a weirdo.
Yeah.
To be a vegetarian. And now to be vegan is considered cool.
Right. You
know? Right. Everybody's heard of it. People are curious about it. People still ask the where do you get your protein question, but I've never been bothered or offended by that because I feel like they're not challenging me. They want to learn.
Yes.
So I don't roll my eyes at that. You know, of course, vegans get tired of answering that question, but it's an opportunity to enlighten people and to show them or to tell them about all, there's so many different protein sources out there.
You cited early in the book in your introduction an article that the New York Times published, I think it was in 2015, featuring Bruce Friedrich, many of us know. More recent than that?
Yes, the one that, well, at least the one I saw.
Wait, I pulled it up, so I should be able to tell when it was, which I will do right now. It was from March of 2019. Okay.
Yes. And actually, that's what one of the things that inspired me to go ahead and do this kind of book that I really would not have, assigned to myself necessarily. I mean, you and I really, really like our kale and our smoothies and our salads, and, you know, I could easily live on that. But what the article emphasized and that I was really inspired by was that, you know, he was a provocateur and he would be the one who would throw paint at models who were wearing fur jackets, red paint. Then he came to, according to this article, that this wasn't working. This wasn't getting people to rethink their habit or to not eat meat or not wear fur. He just found that guilt wasn't happening. Guilt wasn't working. So he went ahead and founded the Good Food Institute, which focused on developing these kind of familiar, meaty-looking proteins. And that really, I think that really did work, and it does work. Maybe you and I wouldn't necessarily gravitate to them on, you know, at least on a daily basis, maybe as a treat. But for some people, they really do serve as a very helpful bridge. Mm-hmm. So if the end result is what we're looking for, why not?
Right, exactly. I don't entirely agree with what he said, that he came to realize that making people feel bad about eating meat doesn't make them consume less of it. I just think the time was right, like I said before, and that capitalism was ready. They saw a market and people were more interested and people needed access. They needed access to products. The time was ripe and ready.
Yes, there were definitely a confluence of circumstances, and you're right. I think everything pulled together.
Right.
To just, you know, it's like you said, it's been there. It's been there. It's been growing steadily.
Yeah. And Beyond Burger, Beyond Meat, 30 years ago, couldn't have made it.
Yeah, I agree with that.
They couldn't have made it without Bruce throwing blood on fur coats decades ago. They couldn't have done it.
Perhaps.
Well, that's just my opinion.
It worked. No, that's okay. Whatever it is, it worked. And the time does seem to have arrived. And you're right. I mean, I remember in the mid-80s traveling through this country. I was doing a book and I was doing some research, traveling through the deep South. My husband and I could barely find anything to eat. Vegetable dish in a restaurant always had fat back in it. So we kind of practically starved until we got to New Mexico. That was a little friendlier to us, even as vegetarians back in the 80s. Now, I mean, you travel almost anywhere. I was in Iceland, for goodness sake. There's such a strong vegan movement there. So it was really fun to see.
Well, even in this country, there's probably still pockets where you can't find anything, I imagine. We were talking earlier before we started this program about my singing career, and I was doing a performance in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, early 2000s. And I was there for a week, and in the restaurants, there was nothing. There was nothing. The salad was coleslaw with mayonnaise. There was nothing else. And it was a very challenging time. I hope that's changed for all of you out there in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. And then surprisingly, when we went to visit a feedlot in Nevada back in 2014, I think it was, and the people that invited us to see it were concerned about what we were going to eat, we went to the local supermarket and there was Gardein.
I think I saw that segment that you did.
Yeah.
To the feedlot. Oh.
Yeah, the lone vegan preaching to the fire.
Oh, the lone vegan, of course. I disassociated that with you. You're the lone vegan. I remember that now.
Thank you. That was a very fascinating time. You also mentioned something in Bruce Friedrich's article that you said it before, making others feel bad about eating meat does not make them consume less of it. And I see this quote by Paul McCartney going around a lot, and maybe it's attributed to other people as well, that if people saw what was going on in factory farms, that would make them stop eating meat. And we know that's not true.
Yeah, I mean, some people, they know what's going on. They know that, we disassociate meat by putting euphemisms, but many people know exactly what they're eating, and they don't really care.
Is why these plant meats are so important.
Right.
Because that's what people want.
A woman came to my site. I have a plant-based meatloaf on the site. Very, very popular recipe. And she said she made it for her husband and she didn't even tell him that it wasn't meat. And he loved it, didn't care. She didn't ever told him. She said she's going to make it again. So I thought that's
right.
Great.
There is a group of people out there that don't know what's in food and don't care, just as long as it tastes good.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the availability, let's say this has become even more mainstream and they have a choice. Okay, you can have this meat burger that's made out of how many different animals, or you can have this which tastes and has the almost similar texture. It may even be better. It may be better for you, better for your heart. I don't know. Maybe they'll make that calculation. So it's growing. It's improving. And, you know, a lot of these companies that make the plant meats, they've really thrived this year where so many companies have really struggled. Mm-hmm. So that's good news also. Some of them have not even been able to keep up with the demand.
I'm surprised with how many new vegan restaurants have opened around New York City this year during the pandemic.
Oh
yes, so many. We have a new Italian delicatessen that's all vegan in Little Italy called Galeotto's. And there's a number of high-end restaurants that have opened up in Manhattan and in Brooklyn. I don't know how they're doing it. And I really wish them well because I haven't been to a restaurant just once in this whole 9 months.
Right. I haven't been to the city probably since, a year ago before this all started. And I'm really shocked to hear that people are brave enough to open new eateries where other ones have had to close. So, well, that's good. Like I said, I wish them well also. That's amazing.
Yes. Let's talk about fake. The word fake. It's a big word.
It is.
We've heard a lot about fake in the last 4 years. We have fake news,
right,
and things that are considered real or are not real. Anyway, fake and real is just so clouded. And then people call burgers and plant meats fake, but they're not fake. They're real food.
I mean, you could also make the argument that some are better than others in terms of their ingredients. Like, for example, Beyond is based on pea protein, which is supposed to be good, benign. Very few people are allergic to it. It's even better for the earth than soy in terms of water use. So pea protein is a real food. I mean, you could also argue that some of them have a lot of preservatives and additives. You know, I talk about it then in the book, that there are always choices. You can argue, you know, I think that the dairy industry wanted to sue people for using the word milk. But the word milk refers to also the nut milks have been out, you know, around, you know, for millennia. So I don't think that plant milks are fake milks, faux milks. They're milks.
They're milk. And we have milk of magnesia, of all things.
Milk of magnesia. So, yeah, I think we should dispense with the word fake.
But, yeah.
You know, just to, you know, I even in the subtitle it says, the recipes are amazing meat alternatives. So you could say that they're plant meats, but you can also say they're meat alternatives. I think we had a lot of those discussions. I don't know if you were at the plant, oh, what was it called? The one at the Javits, the Plant-Based World Expo.
Right. I was not there.
Oh, so amazing. And it was really very much centered on these kind of alternative proteins. That's what people were really excited about.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, the way to describe them was quite variable, but everybody knew what we meant. It is protein sources that are based on plants. So whether we call them meats or
you've been creating cookbooks for decades, and you're aware of recipes and food cultures around the world. Very often, when people move around, they migrate, they'll take a family recipe, they go somewhere else, they can't find all the ingredients, so the recipe gets modified. And it gets modified and modified over time and over locations, and we keep creating new things. And that's really all we're doing here.
I found it interesting because when I first started to gather recipes for this book, there were really, a lot of them were quite different from things that I made before. But so, you know, I looked at restaurant menus, old cookbooks and things like that. But most of them were really centered here in the United States, which means that we truly are a melting pot. And the way we've become so familiar with certain cuisines like Thai and Indian and even Indonesian, it's pretty amazing. That was really enjoyable to, you know, the gathering part was, you know, and of course, you know, Mexican cuisine, but all of these are familiar to Americans. I mean, you could almost say this is an American cookbook, but it really draws upon so many cultures.
And I like to say that some of these ethnic cuisines that are made here in America, and I'm not promoting America, folks. We have a lot of faults going on here, but sometimes they're better.
I have no way to compare, so I don't know. I just know that when I make the Jewish food that I grew up with, I think it's better than the way my mom made it. May she rest in peace. Because I feel like I use better ingredients. Of course, I veganized everything, but I kind of, you know, I think one of the appeals of a book like this is that the food is familiar. So for people who are making the transition, sometimes people say, well, how do I start? And I say, start with things you already like. Okay, you like pizza? Make a really good vegan vegetable pizza, you know, with a lot of veggies. If you like tacos, my gosh, it's so easy to make vegan tacos. Start with the familiar.
We have tacos usually once a week. The fillings change all the time, but we really like them. And I think I told you on the last time we talked that I like to make my own tortillas, but I'm not telling people that they have to do that. What I do want to say about tortillas is read the ingredients, because there are good tortillas out there and there are bad tortillas out there. And I recommend the ones that have corn and not much else.
Well, I started making my own kimchi during this whole lockdown period, but I had a major failure with sourdough. You know, that's been another big thing. And I really don't like bread unless it's sourdough. And I was so disappointed in myself. Maybe I'll go back to it.
Yeah, it's not that hard. You can do this. You got this. What was in your kimchi?
I used, you know, pretty traditional ingredients, Napa cabbage. Then I did get the Korean spice that starts with a G. That's kind of that spicy red pepper. Carrots, scallion. There's really, you know, it's a little bit of a project, but it's really not that complicated.
Hmm.
I feel like it's easier than making sourdough.
Right.
It's definitely easier than making sauerkraut, even though sauerkraut, I think, only has two ingredients, cabbage and salt.
I've got some fermenting right now. I don't think it's difficult.
So sauerkraut?
Yes.
You know, don't you have to have a special tool and to smoosh it down with or not?
Yes and no. Okay. So the first bunch of times I made it, which was a lot, I just shredded the cabbage, added the salt, massage it and let it rest, and then it creates its own brine. And then you shove it into a jar, really pack it down, leave a little water on top, and cover it, and put it somewhere cool and dark. The thing is that it can bubble up and the water can come out because there's gas being created and lactic acid and all this stuff. So you have to prepare to have something underneath for the spillage, whatever, but it's pretty easy. The thing is you want to have the cabbage in the brine and sometimes it'll float up. So you want to weight it down. And some people would use a carrot to weigh it down and then cover it up. But I just splurged recently and I bought these glass weights that fit right in my ball jars. And then these special ball jar covers that release the gas. So you just put the cabbage in there, brine, put the glass down, screw it, and then forget about it. And
can you send me your formula or do you have it online anywhere?
Yeah, I'm going to update it, my recipe. So I'll do that and I'll send it to you. Absolutely.
I do want to try that.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. I love sauerkraut, red or green, little caraway seeds. Yummy. Okay, let's talk about plant-powered protein, 125 recipes for using today's amazing meat alternatives. And yes, a lot of these recipes are familiar, but there was one that popped out right away that I loved, sausage, potato, and escarole soup.
Oh, a really good one for the winter. I just got some escarole, actually. I should make this. Now, this is one of the books that I've done so many books, and I do like to go back to things, and I often am doing new things. But this one, when I leaf through it, and I just have to, every time I have to give a shout out to Hannah Kaminsky.
Hannah Kaminsky. Wait. Let's just say that again.
Hannah Kaminsky. Together?
Okay. Hannah Kaminsky.
She's so talented, and she really made these recipes just come to life. You can just practically eat them off the page. I'm looking for a salad photo that I just absolutely love. It's just like a rainbow. Oh, I do want to say that even though this book centers around, plant protein.
Sure, beautiful.
I use plenty of vegetables because, again, I want this to be a bridge between the whole food, the standard American diet and the whole foods plant-based diet. So, and another thing that I've done is with just about every recipe that I could, I provide an alternative. You can either use a packaged meat alternative, or many of them give you the option of using what are now the vegan traditional proteins, tofu, tempeh, or seitan. Then I have a small chapter at the end of making your own DIY plant proteins. So there's three or four recipes for crumbles, there's seitan, there's like a chickeny style seitan, and a few other things. So almost every recipe has those alternatives.
That's smart. So people can grow with your cookbook. They can start by purchasing readily made plant meats. And then as they become more familiar with the flavors and textures and maybe want to get a little healthier and less processed, they can make their own.
Exactly. And sometimes if I'm lazy, I'll use a packaged item. And if I'm not so lazy, I will use something that I'm looking for a particular photo here of something I actually made last night for an online program.
Oh, gorgeous.
These are crumbles that are made of walnuts, quinoa, and mushrooms. And does it taste like meat? No, but it has a really nice kind of meaty flavor and kind of a mouthfeel
that's good.
Satisfying. And I use this on tacos, so it's really good on tacos.
Yeah, well, mushroom and walnuts are a great combination for a chewy, meaty flavor.
Absolutely. Yeah. And really, this is really very easy to make. I almost prefer it to any kind of packaged protein crumble.
Just absolutely.
That's my preference. But I do occasionally buy the Beyond Ground It is a little bit meaty for my taste, but for other people, they will love it. And it's just, I think it only has pea protein in it. That's just it.
Well, I hope pea protein stays positive over time. When we introduce,
like, we won't find out that there's something wrong with it.
Exactly. You know, over time, we find out more interesting things about the processed foods that we use, because we're meant to eat whole, minimally processed. But for right now, pea protein seems to be a good alternative. And for people that want to avoid soy or have bought into the conspiracy theories about soy, there's pea protein for you.
Well, pea protein, it's made of yellow peas. And another nice thing when you compare it or other kind of plant proteins, is that it uses 99% less water. It's an amazing statistic.
Beautiful, right.
And a pound of meat.
Right.
And it's 93% less something else, you know, that's kind of shocking. I forgot, maybe soil depletion or maybe greenhouse gases or one of those.
Well, we'll have to get the book and read it if you want to find out what it is that pea protein can do for the environment. I wanted to talk about another recipe, beefy barley stew, not just because it sounds so delicious, but because you talk about following a recipe, not having the ingredient that you need, and finding an alternative. And sometimes that turns out to be a better choice. So you ended up using salsa instead of tomatoes in this particular recipe.
Oh, yes, I had to refresh my memory here. Yes, and that was actually a good idea because, as you know, salsa already is packed with flavor. So you know, you open the jar and you don't have to chop up a million things when you're already busy chopping up other things. I'm really all for natural shortcuts. And again, this is also something I give a choice with in this book and others. I usually have a chapter at the end, as I do here, for sauces and condiments that you can make yourself. But I almost always give the choice that use, let's say, for example, a bottled peanut sauce. If it's natural, if it's organic, great. If you, you know, don't feel like buying the 8 ingredients or so that go into the homemade sauce, it has the same ingredients.
Right.
I happen to like making peanut sauce, but I've used the bottle sauce as well. I just like to give a lot of choices and just really make things easy. I like to make things kind of no excuses for the cook.
Well, people definitely have options, but people who aren't familiar with cooking and aren't comfortable in the kitchen need to know that they don't have to follow things exactly. Now, some recipes, if you really stray, can be disasters. And sometimes you can follow a recipe perfectly and it's a disaster, especially if it hasn't been tested. And there are a lot of cookbooks where the recipes or the quantities aren't quite right. But people should get to know their kitchen, do some experimenting, and know it's free. It's free. You can experiment, make some changes.
I try to create the kind of recipes you can mess with and they'll still be good. I would say that most of these, in fact, last night I was doing a demo online and it called for a bok choy. That, you know, I always forget one thing, so I forgot the bok choy. I happened to have Napa cabbage in the fridge from my last kimchi adventure, and it was just as good.
Sure.
So any of these, I don't have this vegetable, I'll substitute another. It'll still be good. On a recipe like seitan, though, when you're making your own seitan, you do have to follow that to the letter of the law. It may not come out well. Most of my recipes are not like that, though.
I'm remembering, I mentioned before when I was in Brazil at the International Vegetarian Congress, I was doing some food demos there. And I gave them lists of the ingredients I needed for the recipes. And when I got there, they just didn't have some of them. They just didn't have them. They didn't exist. I don't know. So it all went well.
Good.
You find quick substitutes, you improvise.
Well, sometimes I do demos at places, well, you know, in the before times, outside of my own kitchen. And there's always something that I forget. Always, always, always. Even though I make lists, I think I'm really organized. When I get there, oh my gosh, I don't have this. And there's really no time to get it. So either I improvise or I just leave it out and it's fine.
Unless and it's fine.
It's the ingredient. But most of the time, it's just something that I've forgotten, like cilantro or the vegan mayo or something like that. So we make do with what we have.
You have smashed sweet potatoes with a beer brat. And you talk about not liking beer, but discovering cooking with beer is quite wonderful.
It is. And I was amazed at the flavor profile it gave these vegan sausages. Yeah, and I really don't like beer. I don't like tasting it. I don't like the way it smells, but somehow cooking it down into these sausages was so good.
It is so good. I love cooking with beer, and I don't do it as often as I like, because I'll cook with wine when I have a bottle of wine that we've opened and then we don't finish it. So it's there and I use it. But beer, usually you finish the can. There's nothing left over. So if I want to cook with it, I have to open a fresh can.
Right. I've sort of given up also on making wine mandatory, like especially if you're calling for 2 tablespoons. I mean, come on. If somebody has an open bottle, great. But if you don't, or you don't want to open a whole bottle for that, you can use water or broth instead.
Yeah. We have vermouth, and we'll use vermouth a lot if we don't have an open bottle of wine. Okay. Next one I want to talk about is the beefy mushroom stroganoff.
Well, what page are we on?
Yeah, I didn't put the pages, but what I wanted to talk about is
the chapter.
I'm going to date myself here. I remember when President Kennedy, John F. Kennedy, was president, and I was 5 years old when he was assassinated. And sometime after that, my neighbor invited me over for beef stroganoff. She had gotten the famous recipe, Jackie Kennedy's recipe for stroganoff, and she invited us over. I had never heard of it, and it seemed like a bizarre dish to myself at that young age, especially combining beef with a creamy dairy, which I was raised Jewish, and I'm not kosher, but it just wasn't a pairing that I was used to. Anyway, but it was wonderful. My first stroganoff. It's not something we often see on vegetarian menus.
No, and I've seen the original recipes with the nutritional analysis, and it's actually shocking. I mean, it looks like, you know, a heart attack on a plate. It really is, because I think the original recipe uses heavy cream. So heavy cream combined with lots of butter, combined with beef. Wow. Call the ambulance right now. But this uses, let's see. So this is one of those recipes that...
Gorgeous.
Choice. You can use the package beefy strips or tips. You can use seitan that you buy, or you can make your own seitan. And for the creaminess is one of my favorite things to use, which is silken tofu. I mean, it's so luscious when you puree it for both sweet and savory dishes.
So you can get a very similar flavor profile of this dish and not the heart attack.
Exactly.
All right, another one that popped out to me was the Thai coconut curry meatballs, page 109. I wrote down the page number for that one. It just, I want to lick the page. It just looks so good. It made me so hungry. Coconut curry is not something that I'm going to eat all the time. It's another rich dish because coconut comes with saturated fat. But it's a wonderful, just so flavorful, so rich. And you mentioned Indian simmer sauce. Can you talk about that?
Oh, yeah. That has been really a game changer for me because I like Indian cuisine, but I've never felt very good at doing it. And, you know, people don't believe me on some levels, even though I develop a lot of recipes, on some levels I am lazy. And so the whole idea of doing the spices, all the different spices and roasting and grinding them, I just felt very intimidated by that. So as we know, just dumping curry powder into something doesn't make it a curry. It makes it yellow. So these Indian simmer sauces are so delicious. They come usually in a 12-ounce jar. They are in the supermarket section that's next to all the, let's say, the Asian sauces and soy sauce and teriyaki sauce. That's where those are. And there are several vegan varieties. Some of them do have dairy, so we have to be very mindful of that. But anything you pour these into, just it tastes like it came from a really good Indian restaurant. So for me, it's been a game changer. So I feel like, again, once again, it's expanded my repertoire. And let's just say this about vegan cuisine. you're not being constrained. Your world just opens up. You're actually going to be experiencing more flavors and more foods rather than less.
Absolutely.
And by the way, with this Thai coconut curry meatballs, there's only one cup of light coconut milk, and that's distributed. I don't have the nutritional analysis, but it is distributed among six servings. So you're not going to get a lot of saturated
right
there. You get that good nice point flavor.
Yes, yeah. You get that wonderful flavor.
With that being said, I'm not the biggest fan of coconut oil.
No.
There's just something really cloying about the flavor and the mouthfeel I just don't like.
That's another faux news or faux story about it being healthy. Coconut oil is not healthy. It is not something that we should be putting in our smoothies just to get a tablespoon or two a day. It does not prevent or reverse Alzheimer's. It is saturated fat. It has some good things in it, some other healthy fats in it, yes, but if you're looking for superfoods, it is not one.
I agree that the jury is still way out on coconut oil. I'm not a fan. Mm-hmm. So and you won't find that in the book. You'll find occasionally recipes with a little bit of light coconut milk. So and if somebody doesn't like that, they can use almond milk or oat milk.
Absolutely, it would still be good.
It'll still be good.
Yeah. You'll get
kind of. I think with coconut milk, a lot of it is about the aroma. That's really nice. So you won't get that, but you'll get a similar feel to it.
Yeah, some people don't even like coconut, so they can use an alternative milk.
Yeah.
Very good. So I laughed a little. I love the section on salad because a lot of people that are transitioning, they'll get a salad because they know it's healthy and they want grilled chicken on it. They want their meats on it because they feel like they need it. So this is like the next step for them, this next transition step. Adding in more vegetables, but still getting their meat. And my favorite is the spinach salad, just because in my early days as a vegetarian, I had BAKOs on my spinach salad.
Oh. Well, I think the BAKOs now come in so many different brands and varieties, you know, different crispy bacon that you need to cook. But, you know, I say in the introduction to this that I said, oh, wow, I'm really disappointed. I won't be able to have a salad chapter in this book. And then I thought, wait a minute, this is America. Americans put meat in everything. And lo and behold, there really were a lot of salads veganized. Like, for example, the traditional Cobb salad.
Yeah, we make that.
Not just one, but usually it has two or three different types of meat on it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we already saw the teriyaki chicken salad. I did a testing party here when I was developing the book because I had a tight deadline and I really needed to make things and serve them and make sure that they were coming out well. And I tell you, the hit of the day was this Thai-inspired beefy salad.
Oh, yeah.
Just nailed it. I had wished that I'd made a double portion of it. There was just something about the lime, kind of the lime flavors and the, you know, little tiny bit of, I'm not a big raw onion fan, but somehow it goes with the salad, mint and these beefy strips. I've made this with different types of kind of beefy protein. Sometimes I make it with packaged. Sometimes I make it with seitan if I happen to have some on hand or if I've made some. There's just something really nice about the way.
Yummy. Well, just a little. Just a little commercial here for raw onions. They are very healthy for you. So if you can include a small amount, maybe a small amount, soak them in water a little bit to kind of soften them. But Dr. Furman always tells us to put raw onions on our salad. Maybe scallions. You don't like scallions?
No, I do. I like scallions more.
Okay.
I mean, they're a little gentler to me. But I use lots of onions and garlic in my cooking. Garlic is another thing I cannot have raw, except in the kimchi because it ferments.
Right. Okay.
In the kimchi. I mean, that raw onion. Oh, maybe I'll try raw onion next time, but I put raw garlic in the kimchi.
Right.
So.
Well, they're good for us. That's all.
For sure.
This has been lovely. I love talking about food and I'm super hungry right now. So I'm going to have to get off and do some fine eating. Nava, what's next for you?
What's next? I actually am revising and updating my very first book, Vegetariana, with all the drawings. And it was a very good project for this very fraught time where we have to stay home a lot. But, and I don't draw as easily as I did way back in the 80s. I've had to throw things out, but it's been really gratifying. I've never built this book digitally. It shows you how long ago that So I had to rebuild it digitally. I veganized it. I put a lot more women and radicals in it. Took out some of the old ancient white men. Like, for example, here.
I love it.
Gertrude Stein and Alice B. Toklas in their garden. I have
excellent.
Like Che Guevara and Karl Marx. This is a book that's probably going to piss some people off.
Oh, no, it's going to be a hit. I can't wait to see it. When do you expect it to be out?
You know, I'm going to publish this one myself, so I keep saying it'll be ready when it's ready. I hope in this next calendar year. Because I have just about finished editing it and building it digitally. I have replaced a lot of the drawings. I've kept a lot of the original drawings. Some of the original drawings got ruined. They got moldy because, you know, from one move to the other. But yeah, it's been really intense working on it. When I look back on it, I'll say it's fun. Now I say it's been intense. Because it's not as easy for me now to do these really super detailed drawings. I am very fond of this drawing I did of Karl Marx. And the reason he's in it, he was really no vegetarian or vegan. But as England was moving to more large-scale animal agriculture, wrote that it is very inefficient economically.
Wow.
So he really protested against that. So I thought that was really interesting. He deserves to be in this book. And then besides, he's really fun to draw. And he was originally Jewish, so like Karl Marx.
Okay, this is good
Call me a Marxist, that's okay with me.
Well, I'm excited to see the stories about the women in the book. I have a cocktail recipe book somewhere behind me, and it's all about cocktails named after women activists and the things that they've done. And it was really a fun read. And I learned a lot about it. Things like California was like the last state to legalize women being bartenders. And it wasn't that long ago.
It
was a lot of disturbing news in that little book, but also fun.
Well, interesting thing that I learned was that Coretta Scott King was a vegan for the last 10 years of her life, and that Rosa Parks was a vegetarian for about 40 years.
Makes sense.
And I've been writing a lot about intersectionality.
Yes, beautiful.
And, yeah, so it'll be sort of like the old and the new and different things that I've learned, and the introduction will go a lot more into the history of vegetarianism, veganism, and women's part in that. So.
I love it. I'm really looking forward to that one.
Oh, thank you. I'm looking forward to finishing it. And, you know, I have a lot of things always kind of bubbling projects, but, you know, they're in different phases.
Good. Keep doing it. That's what we're here for. We're here to learn. We're here to work. We're here to keep busy. Be creative.
Be creative. So it's really so important.
Yeah. Okay, Nev, it's a pleasure. And again, like I said, I think in the last interview we had, I can't wait to get together and break bread. Maybe it'll be some homemade sourdough bread that you've succeeded in making.
You know, all of us vegan ladies in New York, you know, in and around New York City can get together for a reunion. That would be so sweet.
Yeah, we have to do that.
Yeah.
Neva Atlas, thank you for joining me and writing Plant-Powered Protein 125 Recipes for Using Today's Amazing Meat Alternatives.
Thank you, Karen. Take care. Stay safe. Stay well.
Yes. And you and yours.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you have it. That was my interview with Neva Atlas with her newest cookbook. And I was really hungry after that interview. And I want to tell you that I have eaten a lot since then, because that was Thursday and today is Tuesday. So I've had a lot of opportunity Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday to eat. And I've got my personal chef here with me who has really done an outstanding job of taking care of me these last few days while I've been going through some stuff. Thank you. I'm bringing him on to share the spotlight here, Gary DeMattei.
Hi, everybody. It's great to be back on It's All About Food.
It's all about food.
Yes, you have been going through some crazy stuff, but so has everyone else, right? And that's why we're here.
Yes, it's really nice when you have friends, family support. And if you don't have friends, family support, it's going to be extra hard. And what I hope here on this program, I hope that we're creating some community here.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I want you to feel at home with us here.
In our responsible eating and living house.
In our responsible eating and living pandemic headquarters, because the pandemic does not seem to be ending.
Ending anytime soon. But people are getting vaccinated, and hopefully this will help. I just want to get back to Nava's book for 1 second. Plant-Powered Protein, 125 Recipes for Using Today's Amazing Meat Alternatives. And there are more products coming out on the market that we're being made aware of that are meat alternative products that really strike a chord in my heart.
Why is that, Gary?
Well, Bling. Because they are Italian.
Oh, Italian. It's
meat-free
Italian.
Products.
There's a lot of Italian products.
Yeah, like one of them I've been reading about that really sounds fascinating and makes my mouth water are Mia products, M-I-A, Mia products. And they are Italian cold cuts.
Mm.
They do things like prosciutto style, carpaccio style, spicy salami style, roasted turkey style, pepperoni style. And what I love about Nava's book is that she comes right out and says, plant-powered protein. Because we all know the question that everybody asks us after we let them know we're vegan, still to this day is,
where do you get your protein?
And what you like to say is, plants. Yeah. That's where you get your protein. So I like that about this book because right away it's debunking the myth that you can't get protein from plants.
Yeah, I like calling them plant meats. Plant meats. There's all different kinds of phrases. We've talked about this on this program with different authors and experts in the vegan meat analog movement.
Analog's a good one. Yeah.
Well, but meat analog, it doesn't sound appetizing. It sounds kind of scientific.
Yeah, let's have meat on a log. Meat analog.
But plant meat, I like it.
Yeah, well, there's plant meats and there's plant milk cheeses.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, it's just becoming this great world on the one hand for those of us who want to transition off of eating animals because we should be all about the animals. We should take care of them, not eat them.
So that's my vote.
Yeah.
Calling these new products plant meats.
Plant meats. Well, there's a lot of plant meats coming out on the market because I think the world is becoming more aware that there's a demand for that kind
of thing. And then I'm hoping ultimately all meats will be plant meats and then we don't have to call them plant meats. And it's making me think, okay, I'm totally getting off subject here.
Off topic.
Yeah, off topic. Whoop, whoop, whoop. I'm thinking about a lot of the career names that we have. For example, we have stewards and stewardesses, and then we change to flight attendant.
Right.
And we had waiter and waitresses, and right. we changed to servers.
Right. Firemen, and now we change to firefighters.
Right. And chairman to chair.
Right.
So sometimes these qualifiers of names are necessary, and in the cases that I'm just bringing up, they're not. We don't need to specify gender, but right now we do need to specify whether foods are of animal origin or plant origin.
Yes, I like the fact that a lot more products are putting vegan on their label.
Right.
It's very comforting.
But plant meat sounds softer or friendlier to me than vegan meat.
You know, and looking through Nava's book, I'm getting hungry, and that's impossible because I just ate a huge lunch.
Oh my God, we just had a huge meal.
But looking at some of these recipes, I can't wait to try them. Smoky broccoli, bacon, mac and cheese. That sounds really good. And the bacon she uses is tempeh bacon. How many of you out there have ever had tempeh bacon?
I'm raising my hand.
Now, there's something that these, for example, these Mia meat products that I just mentioned, tempeh is gluten-free. These Mia meat products, these Italian cold cuts, the prosciuttos and carpaccios and salamis, etc. They aren't. They're made with wheat. They're made with gluten. And that's another name for gluten-based meats, in case you don't know, is seitan.
Right. I'm thinking, I don't know of any vegan deli meats that don't have seitan in them. They might be out there, but
I think there are a couple of gluten-free.
The seitan gives those products their flexibility
chew.
And their chew. It's a certain special right. texture.
I really like seitan meat products, but I also like the gluten-free products. I like the tempeh. I like the tofu. I don't like the mushrooms, but a lot of people use mushrooms as a meat alternative.
And yes.
You were
reading, I'm going to make you some mushroom bacon next week.
Yeah. You were reading about mushroom bacon.
Yes.
Was it that in this book?
No. It was in Mark Reinfeld's.
Right.
The, what is it called? The Ultimate Age-Defying Plan.
Right.
I just gave that book to a friend of mine, and he made the mushroom bacon and was going nuts over it.
He was going mushroom over it.
And I think you might like it.
You know, that's what you said, and so I'm willing to try it. But that's another item that folks turn to when they're looking for plant meat, to use your term, is mushrooms, or are mushrooms. Mushrooms are a great plant meat foundation.
Well, I just want to remind you, there is a cookbook out called Baconish. And I interviewed the author a few years ago now, and there are recipes to make bacon-style foods
right.
out of just about anything.
Pecans.
Pecans, eggplant, coconut, of course, mushrooms.
Right.
You can take a lot of different products that, through cooking, you can make chewy, and then you add
smoky.
A little sweetness, a little smokiness.
And if you don't want to use liquid smoke, we... And probably you have also discovered smoky paprika.
Smoky paprika. And smoked chipotle. What is it called? Smoky chipotle.
But that also has a lot of heat.
Yeah,
to it.
It's
very
spicy.
You don't
caliente.
Need a lot. You don't need a lot with that. But the gluten-free plant meat alternatives obviously are tofu, tempeh, and mushrooms. Those are the big three. But then there's products that Nava is talking about that are available. She's taking them in this book, and she's turning them into great recipes.
Into your favorite homemade...
Like meatloaf.
Cozy memories of the old days when everything was wonderful.
Right.
Did those days ever exist?
I don't think so.
But that doesn't matter. We can still make those cozy, comfortable, yummy foods.
Right. I mean, who doesn't like a good grain loaf? I know I do. I like to make a plant meatloaf out of our four-grain recipe that we have at Responsible Eating and Living.
Right, that's a good one, Gary.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to trying some of these recipes in Nava's book. She's terrific. She's been around a while, right?
She certainly has.
Yeah. So good job, Nava Atlas.
Woo!
And great book out there. So what's going on in the world? Not much, huh?
Can I breathe yet?
No, not yet.
It's been a very wound tight week.
Right.
A very wound tight 4+ years.
Yes.
And we're coming to the last few days, and let's hope things go peacefully.
There are too many people going plant-based in the world. There are too many people who are smart. There are too many people who are evolving for any of this insanity to get really too out of hand.
Although, I'd like to think that. I like to think, too, that the younger generation, that there are more out there that are against exploitation or against violence to non-human animals and humans, and that humans as a species are evolving and improving, but time will tell.
Right. But there are more important questions, Karen. For example, is Kim Kardashian really going plant-based? I mean, that news is huge.
Yes.
Right?
Well, maybe after she divorces Kanye, that's what she'll do. Oh, goodness. We were watching a Netflix series this week called Away.
Yes.
And we enjoyed it very much and are disappointed that it's not going to continue after the first season.
It's a smart series. It really is. Didn't get very good reviews, but don't read the reviews. Just
watch
it.
Yeah, we liked it.
It's great. Hilary Swank and a cast of incredible actors all coming together to go to Mars.
But I wanted to mention a few things. I'm not giving away any spoilers. This is not a spoiler alert. But in one of the episodes, their water distiller breaks down in their ship to Mars.
Right.
And they have to work really hard to figure out how to make water. And we were talking about it because we distill our water every day. It's really an effort.
Yes.
It's something that we put energy into every day, several times, in order to make sure we have clean, pure water. And I think many people take their water for granted.
I think so. And I've really become very aware of how clean water is just essential in sustaining life.
So it was very obvious in this fictional series of people going to Mars because they were running out of a way to make water. And when that's over, life is over. I just hope for those that watched it gained a new appreciation for the things that we have that we take for granted. Air to breathe, water to drink. We want those things to be clean and plentiful.
That should be the focus of every administration.
Yeah.
Clean water.
Clean air. Clean air. Soil. Healthy clean soil. Yeah. Food.
Food. Shelter. Taking care of one another.
So maybe some folks had to go to Mars virtually, fictionally, and maybe that helped them have a greater appreciation for the things that we have that we've been taking for granted.
I think that's a good thing to do, is to devote our lives to making sure that people are aware of how important those simple things are, because we tend to forget. Wrapped up with Amazon and buying crap. And
politics.
Politics.
And if you're looking for a place to come together with those who don't agree with you, I think air, water, soil, and food is a good place to start.
Right. And we talk about theater a lot on this program, and some good news came, and I promise I'll segue into continuing this conversation. I'm not going off topic. Dr. Fauci announced that the theaters might start opening up in the fall of 2021. Aligned with what you were just talking about, a theater piece that we have been looking at lately for different reasons. Someone has asked me to look into it, to possibly direct a radio version of it, is Godspell by Stephen Schwartz. And one of the lines, I think, is in line with what you had just said, and that is, we must be devoted to one another, rejoice in hope, give with simplicity, and show mercy with cheerfulness, and do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with love.
There it is again, love.
I think love is really the answer.
It's hard sometimes when people on the other side, or on the perceived other side, are spewing much hate.
Hate and evil. But think about it. I mean, going plant-based, going vegan is an act of love. It's an act of love. It's finally saying to yourself, I can't participate in this hateful, evil activity. I need to land on the side of love. I need to stop the insanity. You talk about how it's all about food, and I'd like to make it one better. It's really all about love.
It's all about love, everybody, and we're going to end with a big hug to all of you out there.
Yeah.
Sending lots of love.
Clean water, clean air, clean soil, shelter, all of that is an act of love, too.
Yeah.
An act of love for one another.
There you go. Everybody, thanks for joining us so much this week, and we'll be back next week. You can reach us at info@realmeals.org. Check out the website at responsibleeatingandliving.com.
Have a delicious week. We'll be right back.